Welcome to the Italian Grape Geek Podcast. Join us as we explore personal stories of travel and tasting with Italy's must-know grape varietals. Chart your own course with My Italian Grape Geek Journal, your personal tasting companion to accompany the series. Available now on Amazon. With thanks to Colangelo and Partners for their generous support with this project.
Welcome to the Italian Wine Podcast. I'm Cynthia Chaplin, and this is Voices. Every Wednesday, I will be sharing conversations with international wine industry professionals, discussing issues in diversity, equity, and inclusion through their personal experiences working in the field of wine. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe and rate our show wherever you get your pods. Hello, and welcome to Voices. This is Cynthia Chaplin, and today I'm so excited to welcome Christina West to Voices. Christina's father, Rainer, started West Winery in 2003, and Christina took it over just last year. She's already recognized as a passionate winemaker and a leader of a new generation of Austrian female winemakers. So I'm really happy that we could chat today. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Christina.
Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Well, it's great to talk to you. It's nice to be in the same time zone with one of my guests for once. You're in Austria, obviously, and I'm Verona. So you grew up in the wine world in Austria, but when did you decide you wanted to become part of it yourself and have a career in the wine sector?
Yeah, that came pretty early. But I grew up in a wine growing area, but as my father founded the winery only in 2003, it was very small at the beginning and we were living somewhere else. So I was always very fascinated about his job or the way he's speaking about his job. And that really got me. And the first, I think I didn't even realize how much, because there was like a school, festive about like 10 years or about something in our town where village where I grew up. And someone asked the children what they want to become in the future. And some of them said something like, yeah, I want to become a doctor. I want to be an astronaut or something like this. And I said, yeah, I want to be a winemaker. And she looked at me like, what? Like, yes, I want to grow wine. Like I was about 10 at that age. So I had no clue what it is to be a winemaker. But I was just fascinated by my father's job. And that's basically when I decided, okay, I want to know more about what it is like or how it will be like when I'm becoming a winemaker. And since from that on, I always knew what I wanted to do.
I can only imagine the parent-teacher conference when your teacher said to your parents, do you know?
Yeah, it was quite a laugh. And then but you're not drinking wine. No, and no, I'm not. I'm not.
It worked for you because you ended up taking over from your dad last year. But before that, you did go on and study at the very prestigious viticulture school, Kloster Neuburg, near Vienna, and you worked in some of Europe's elite wineries, such as Domaine Marquis d'Angerville in Burgundy, Domaine POC à POC in southern France, and Weingut Künstler in Rheingau. So what was it like being a young woman in these very elite circles of wine in Europe? You know, did you have lots of female classmates at university? Was there support for women in Austria?
Yeah, I mean, there was always we have been some girls as well in Kloster Neuburg, of course. And what makes me really happy is that the number of women going to Kloster Neuburg to study enology is rising. So when I was in Kloster Neuburg, we were about 36 students and six girls, and now they are like some classes even half-half. So this is really great. And when becoming the wine, of course, there is always something which annoys you that maybe doesn't come across if you're a male and going into the wine industry. But in general, and I think that's also the best tip I would give everyone or every woman thinking about doing something in the wine industry, rather running a winery or working in sales or anything, just do it and don't listen to the others. I mean, some things, yes, but keep focused. And that's why of course, some like, do you need help with that? In the cellar, or no, I actually know how to do it, or I will do the filter, you can do this. It's like, no, I know it too. So you can do the other thing as well.
I think being able to stand up for yourself and say, I know what I'm doing here is very good advice. Don't let other people push you around. Don't listen to it. Keep doing what you've been trained.
Exactly.
It's amazing that, I mean, you're not a very elderly lady. So it's amazing that, you know, you were only 6 women, and now it's up to 50% women in the field. So that's a very quick change. That's good news for our industry. It's happening like that here in Italy too. But I have a question for you, because in Italy, we've got about 50% female students in the enology schools as well now. But mm-hmm. when we look at the data coming out of the school, 90% of the men get a job in their first year, and only 12% of the women. Do you know anything how it is for Kloster Nyberg, the students there now?
I do not have any numbers for that, to be honest. I don't have something similar to compare that. But it's also very, like in Austria, it's still very, very traditional. So you go to winemaking school when you have a winery at home.
Yeah, I think that's very much a point in Italy too. It's changing. I have some younger female colleagues who have gone to enology school and they don't have wineries. But it's interesting because none of them are actually working at a winery right now. So I think this is something we need to look at in Europe. It's great if your family has a winery, but it's a little more difficult if not. So, and I threw that question at you, so I apologize. But it's just, I have 4 daughters. So it's always interesting to me to see, you know, how the jobs are panning out after people finish university, especially in our wine industry. Italy is, like Austria, quite traditional. So a lot of men, and it's not that easy to crack into the industry. So, you know, you're in charge now at Wes, and I know you restructured the winery when you took over from your father. So what changes did you implement, and what was the reaction from your dad and everybody else at the winery?
Yeah, my dad and myself, we have huge respect for like his experiences, but he also brings that respect back into my experiences. So when I joined in 18, there was always the question, what do you think? And what made us like stick together is that, how can we do better? And then there is no, okay, I know better than you and this and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, okay, how can we improve? And that was a huge thing. And then I came with, for instance, for the Village wines and the single vineyards, with no, like a more or less questioned, like every step, if it's necessary or not. For instance, like the Village and the Cruz, we are not filtering them anymore, and also no fining like bentonite, and only we are leaving them on the whole lease very long, so for about nearly a year, and then only rack it 2 times, add a little bit of sulfur, and that's it.
Wow, you're building some serious structure there. That's very different.
Yeah. And I think more attention to details. So also we switched to only wax bottles when it comes to single vineyards, because we do export quite a lot. And I think it's a lot of work, but it's nice to have like a moment with your bottle of wine before you send them in the world. And it's a small thing, but I really appreciate that doing, even though it's sometimes a pain in the ass and really takes some time, and how to do it nicely and everything. But in general, it's, I'm really happy doing this.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Don't forget to visit our YouTube channel, Mama Jumbo Shrimp, for fascinating videos covering Stevie Kim and her travels across Italy and beyond, meeting winemakers, eating local foods, and taking in the scenery. Now, back to the show.
Well, I know you're also focusing a lot on sustainability, which is a big key issue for me and, you know, for all of us in the wine industry right now. So fill us in on what sustainability means for you at WES. You know, how are you implementing sustainable practices there?
Yeah, I think here, like sustainability is also a word, like a learned and call them in conversations, bullshit phrases. Everybody heard them. It's like, what is sustainability?
That is so true.
But sustainability for me is like to improve and to do something better than I've done last year in focusing on my impact at the nature. So if it's a small step, only like substituting some plastic clamps with some biodegradable ones, that's already good. And next year I'm going to think about what I'm doing the next step. So this year we will use very like a lot of cleaver in our terrace vineyards to have a cover crop as well in the terraces to lower the temperature of the soil. So next year we will think about something else. So it will always step by step.
Sustainability doesn't just come, as you said, you know, it is a bullshit world, like natural wines can be a bullshit world too.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't just come. You have to approach it in a 360 degree way. And that's not easy, and it's expensive, and it's time consuming, but it's important for our world, as you said, you know, keeping protecting nature and making sure that the products we create are, you know, are pure and authentic too. So I love what you're doing. And I know, you know, you mentioned you're dedicated to, you know, expressing your individual vineyard sites. So, you know, where do you see your winery 5 years from now? You just took over. So what's the dream wine you want to make? If you could make any wine at WES, what would you make?
I have a very, a nice project which I really love at the winery. And I really see the improvement in this vineyard so much from the last years. So it's our Pinot Noir site, single vineyard site, which is more dedicated to Riesling. And we planted it in 2011 together with my dad. So we have 36 different clones in this vineyard and 2 wines per place. So a planting density about 10,000 plants per hectare. And this is a very, very cool site. And during like some colleagues were like, okay, are you producing sparkling? And like, no, we want to produce decent red Pinot Noir. And first vintage which we really released was 18. And it becomes hotter and hotter, like everywhere. And this vineyard, like if somebody says we in 5 years having a barrel sample or like from vintage 2003 in their glass, and they're getting them blind, and they say something, it's something between Germany and Burgundy, but it's like very appellation driven. I think this is a cool site in Austria, Pinot Noir from Kremstal. This would be brilliant.
That's amazing. I'm going to have to keep an eye out and taste it as you go along. You always say great wines come from skill and knowledge and empathy, and you don't necessarily need broad shoulders to do that. And I love that quote. As I said, I say similar things to my daughters and to my younger female colleagues who I mentor. So, you know, what's your advice for young women coming into the European wine business now? You know, you said don't let people push you around. Don't listen to everybody else's opinion. But what would you advise people to do who came to you and said, I want to get into wine now?
Just like come for an internship. Just have fun. Go for a harvest. Go pruning and talk with the people. Actually, wine people are super nice and they tell you a lot of things. So, of course, read the books. but really listen to your stomach feel. Like, what do you really want to do? Approach these winemakers and ask them and about their experiences, and then join them, and also join them what they want to drink and what they think about wine, because wine is something very, very personal. And I think, like, talking to the people, this is very, very important, and listen to your feelings, what you want to do. And if it is 1 hectare of planting wines in somewhere and only cultivating it with pigs, do it.
I think this is great advice. I think practical experience is more important than almost anything else you can learn in a classroom or for a book. You know, we all need our books, and we all need to go to university and study, but getting a practical experience and really getting your hands on and seeing how it all works, and getting a mentor, somebody who has more experience than you, and tasting a lot of wines, all those things, that's great advice. I think practical experience is really valuable, and people seem to forget that. So excellent advice.
Yeah, and also this fun and make mistakes and laugh about it. During harvest, there are always some funny things which are happening, and or like harvest, pruning, anything. Make mistakes and appreciate them, because they are super important. And they are like when you go through your career, you will remember those and love them off, but don't worry too much about them.
And it builds your story too. I think you know, that's all of those mistakes are part of who we are going forward. So it's nice to hear that. Do you take interns at West? Do you invite people to come?
Yes, we do. And actually, last year we had a great intern. So last vintage 2003, we had a great intern which was already a guest at your podcast, and she came from like the wine world is very, very small. So she came from a friend who is a sommelier in France. And we have him as a friend in common, and he recommended me to her to come, and she's now a great friend of mine, and we had a marvelous time here, and learned from each other a lot, which is also so we definitely take interns. And we already have one for this season, but we still have room. So if somebody who is hearing that, very, very welcome.
Well, that's one of the things I like to do. You know, if I can help anybody who's listening, it sounds like Wes is a very open, you know, generous, full of good spirit place to get your feet on the ground and to start learning. I love your attitude to, you know, people just starting in the wine world. So I hope people who are listening will feel encouraged and reach out to you and get in the vineyard. But before I let you go, I'm going to ask you one last question. You know, I said I'm in Verona and only a 6-hour drive from Kremstal. So I love high acid Austrian Rieslings. That's why I'm interested in this Pinot Noir, because it's going to be my kind of a style. And Northern Italy and Austria share so many geological aspects and wine styles. So what's your favorite Italian wine when you're not drinking Austrian?
Yeah, my favorite Italian wine, as I said before, with a friend, she's now living in Florence. And we had, of course, a lot of Chianti Classico together, which I really enjoy. But we went to a friend of hers, and that's, again, how small the wine world is, to Torri Brancoli Winery in Santa Cristina. And there, Federico, we were sitting at the terrace, and he poured us his orange wine. And saying that, I love every kind of wine, but sometimes not this kind of orange wines. I wouldn't choose, but I was like, when he poured, I was like, oh, I'm not I like classic good wine. And he poured it, and we had it aside with Pecorino cheese, and this was stunning. It was a stunning, spicy wine with lots of depth, and when thinking about Italian wine, I'm thinking about that moment and this wine. It's the Il Matin. I'm sure I pronounced every word wrong in Italian now. So I never had it in school, so apologize, Federico.
Everyone can find it, I'm sure. But I'm shocked that you mentioned an Italian orange wine. And it's so funny because you're right, the world of wine is very small and people are very generous and open and supportive. But orange wine is really an up-and-coming thing. How is orange wine in Austria? Is it taking off there as much as it is here?
It is a lot, but yeah. I once said, and I do think that is, of course, trends go, like come and go, but like a black dress from Givenchy will never get out of trend. And I really want to make wines which are more like the Givenchy black dress.
I have to agree with you. I feel that way about Pet Nat too.
Yeah. There are some good ones. There are some fun ones. But like to decent sit at the table, I prefer some nice Riesling single vineyard like Pfaffenberg or like a good Pinot Noir.
We are not going to get anywhere better in this conversation than that. So I'm so grateful that you came on today. It was really fun chatting with you and I wish you all the best. I'm going to keep my eye on Wes and see if I can get hold of that Pinot Noir here. So thank you so much for your time and I hope that you get a bunch of wonderful interns this year.
Thank you. Cheers. Thanks.
Take care, Christina. Ciao.
Take care too. Bye.
Thank you for listening. And remember to tune in next Wednesday when I'll be chatting with another fascinating guest. Italian Wine Podcast is among the leading wine podcasts in the world and the only one with a daily show. Tune in every day and discover all our different shows. You can find us at italianwinepodcast.com, SoundCloud, Spotify, Himalaya, or wherever you get your pods.